Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This week on WBUR, we're featuring an exclusive series that takes an in-depth look at the remarkable excitement and energy going on right now in the world of cancer research in Boston. We're calling the series This Moment in Cancer. Here's former Vice President Joe Biden speaking in October of last year about his cancer moonshot and what makes now different from the last big push on cancer.
In 1971, President Nixon's interest and concern was real and genuine, but he had no army. He had no resources. No clear strategy existed to win. But 45 years later, after decades and decades of funding, new research, training scientists and physicians, treating millions of patients because of so many of you, we now have a powerful new technologies and tools. We have an army.
And so much of that incredible research, that research army, lives right here because it's happening here in Boston. One of those researchers has been working for more than 3 decades on the forefront of cancer. He's Tyler Jacks. He's the director of the Koch Institute for Integrative Cancer Research at MIT. He previously served as the chair of the National Cancer Advisory Board and as co-chair of the Obama administration's Cancer Moonshot Blue Ribbon Panel. And he joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me.
Do you feel that excitement that Vice President Biden was talking about?
I most certainly do. I completely agree with everything he said. We're living through a remarkable time where we're translating this investment that we've made in cancer science to new treatments, and they're benefiting a large number of people, and they'll benefit many more in the years to come.
But so why? What's so different now? What's coming together that we haven't had come together in the decades
that people
have been battling this disease?
I think it's important to put it into perspective. You know, he referenced the war on cancer in 1971. In 1971, we knew nothing about how cancers really arose. And in the time since then, thanks to the investment in research that enabled, we've learned a great deal. In 1971, we didn't know of a single cancer gene. Now we sequence cancer genomes at will. We know of hundreds of cancer genes, and we have developed new drugs that target many of those and thereby provide what we call precision medicines for cancer.
Hmm. So we have technologies coming together. We have different branches of the biomedical sciences coming together. We have this nexus here in Boston that seems perfectly set up for that. I want to explore that for a little bit more in just a moment. But Professor Jacks, it's still the second leading cause of death, right?
Yes.
The second leading killer in America, cancer is. Are we at risk of being too optimistic of the steps forward that we could take here right now?
We certainly do have to be realistic about where we stand. It is the case that cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the U.S. In fact, in nearly half the states, it's the leading cause of death. And we have a ways to go. This year alone, 600,000 Americans will die from cancer. 8.2 people in the world will die from cancer.
8.2 million
people. And so we have a long way to go, but the progress that we've seen in the recent years has been so dramatic in so many cases that I think we can safely project ahead that we have turned the corner, and those numbers will begin to come down, and eventually we will be in a position to control this disease much more effectively.
That's actually quite a bold statement to, in your words, safely say that we have turned a corner.
Yes.
You feel that confident about it?
I do, and I base it on, you know, real evidence. For certain cancers, take chronic myelogenous leukemia, which 15 years ago was a death sentence, and patients were treated with conventional chemotherapy, and 75% of them were dead 3 or 5 years later. Today, those same patients are treated with one of these targeted therapies, and virtually all of them survive with virtually no side effects, just as one example. Now,
that sounds like a miraculous one.
Classic example,
yeah.
But it's not going to be the only example. There are many other drugs of that sort. There's new strategies to use the immune system to mobilize cells of the immune system against cancer, which are showing great effect in other diseases. So I think this is not wishful thinking. This is based on real, solid evidence in the clinic, which will make a huge impact in the years ahead.
So give us a little 101 on, say, how these targeted gene therapies work.
Yeah.
For people who don't understand the technology, what's so different about it?
So cancer cells arise from normal cells because genes get altered. And you can sometimes, you can equate some of those genes with the accelerator in your car getting stuck in the on position. The cells get stimulated to divide inappropriately. These targeted therapies reverse that effect. They block the accelerator from getting stuck. They remove that signal, and it causes the cells to stop dividing or, in some cases, to die. Now, importantly, there are many such genes. And so there's not a cure-all. There's not just one drug. You need to develop a suite of these things to target each individual alteration for an individual's cancer type.
So they're that specialized? They're that customized?
There are many, many cancer genes, and therefore there will be many, many targeted therapies. It's not to say that every last cancer has its own individual mutation or set of mutations. There are patterns and so forth. But we do need an arsenal of these drugs. Cancer is complex, and therefore there is not a one-size-fits-all solution.
Interesting. So when you say cancer is complex, that leads me to wonder, we've been discussing this in our office today, that it seems as if for some time now researchers have said that cancer isn't just one disease,
yeah,
but a variety of diseases.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I can make that more complicated for you, in fact. So, yeah, that typically refers to the fact that cancer is a set of diseases affecting many different tissues. It's lung cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. But it's not just that, because there are many forms of lung cancer or breast cancer or prostate cancer. But it's not just that, because actually, as cancers develop in an individual patient, an individual cancer cell might be different, a little bit different, from the cell that's sitting right next to it.
Huh.
And so there's heterogeneity, we call it, which makes the problem that much harder.
Yeah. You know, I don't mean to be a negative Nelly. But I just want to return to this idea that are we at risk of being too optimistic? Because, for example, I remember, 15, 20 years ago when Dr. Judah Folkman mm-hmm. was doing his groundbreaking research on angiogenesis and cancers and trying to figure out, you know, what if we attacked the circulatory system that mm-hmm. feeds cancer? And it seemed for a long time he was making great progress.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of attention around
yeah.
that. I don't know where that research stands right now, but you know, we've seen those glimmers of hope before that somewhat faded away.
So let me contrast the current situation with then. Judah Folkman was a pioneering scientist and did very important work in that area. It did lead to the development of cancer drugs. They actually didn't work that well, but they were overhyped. The New York Times published that we would cure cancers in 2 to 3 years. This is a proclamation from Jim Watson, a Nobel Prize winner. That was overpromising. We didn't know enough to actually say that, and they were wrong. In this case, what I'm saying is based on data from patients in the clinic who are living longer thanks to these new treatments. Now, I do not want to suggest that tomorrow or next year or 5 years from now or 10, cancer will be a thing of history. It's not true. There's still a long way to go. My point is that the progress has been such in the recent years that it's safe to project that we will get there.
Hmm. Well, we talked about targeted gene therapies mm-hmm. for certain kind of cancers. This morning on WBUR's Morning Edition, listeners may have heard about the promise of another type of treatment, immunotherapies. Mm-hmm. And I just want to play a small clip here from Richard Murphy. He's the 51-year-old father from Marshfield who was featured in the story this morning. Let's hear from him.
I hate the term game changer, but the immunotherapy, you know, saved my life. There's no doubt about it. You know, if it was 5 years earlier, I don't think I'd be here with this microphone in front of me. Maybe even 1 year earlier.
So a lot of excitement, as you talked about, around immunotherapy that's harnessing the immune system to fight cancers. Tell us a little bit more about that. But I've also heard there's some significant potential downsides
right.
to this one.
So I actually heard that report this morning as I was getting changed. So I think that, and I like the way he stated it, because it actually reflects the progress that we're making, this rapid progress that we're making. So immunotherapies broadly stimulate the immune system to recognize and eliminate your cancer cells as though they were foreign, like they eliminate bacteria or virally infected cells. Cancer cells are different from your normal cells. They're derived from normal cells that become different through this mutational process. We now know that if we can stimulate the immune system to see those cancers as foreign, to wake up the immune system, those cells can, in fact, recognize and eliminate the cancer cells. And there are many examples where this has worked. Former President Jimmy Carter is alive today because immunotherapy worked to cure his metastatic melanoma with metastasis to his brain. That was a death sentence not long ago. He is now cancer-free. And there are many other patients in that category. So these new immunotherapies work. The challenge is that if you stimulate your immune system, it might get overstimulated, and it might actually start causing harm to normal cells in your body. So we have to work a balance between attacking the cancer and not attacking yourself. And frankly speaking, we're still figuring out those rules.
Mm. What is it about Boston or the Boston area that seems to make the research, like this is such a locus of this cutting edge research on cancer right now?
Well, we have a tremendous number of cancer researchers, literally thousands of cancer research, and we have some of the best in the world. So the great institutions in Boston, MIT, Harvard, BU, BC, Tufts, they attract the best of researchers from around the world. They're well-resourced as well. And I think we take a very bold approach to the disease. We try to do transformative things here. I run a cancer center at MIT where we're trying to really push on the cutting edge of science and technology. So I think we push ourselves, we push each other. And because there are so many of us, we have the opportunity to interact and collaborate and work across institutions. And that gives us a distinctive advantage.
You've been doing this for, what, 30-something years?
Even longer, sadly, yes.
You don't look it. What first attracted you to the field of cancer research? And
yeah, I started as a college student, actually, and I didn't know that this is what I wanted to do. But I took a course from a professor who was interested in molecular biology. It was a new field at the time. He invited me to work in his lab. I got to do it firsthand at the bench, and I was really taken with it and the power of it. And then just a year later, I heard a professor from MIT, now one of my colleagues, Bob Weinberg, describe new research in his lab. This is 1982, describing the cloning of the first cancer gene, the very first one. And I thought, this is amazing. This is a breakthrough that will lead to not just a better understanding of cancer, but a way to approach it logically and scientifically. And I decided right then, actually, I think at the end of that class, that that's what I wanted to do, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
In the decades that followed, did you ever feel a sense of frustration that we hadn't been making more progress?
Absolutely. It's a slow road. Cancer research, any type of biomedical research, takes time and takes patience and takes perseverance. And I and all of my colleagues have suffered through the trials and tribulations of failed experiments and observing the field as a whole and the fits and starts and blind alleys that we go down. But you have to keep going. And fortunately, with the collective effort of all of us in this community, we've made great progress. And now, for sure, it's paying off to the benefit of patients.
Given how common this disease or diseases is, has cancer touched your family?
Yes, absolutely. Many members have had cancer diagnoses. Many have died from those. I feel fortunate in my immediate family that that's not been true, but many members of my family and my community. So all of us are touched by this disease. It's all too common. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many of us care. Even if we have not had the experience personally, we've seen it. We've seen it affect families and friends. And frankly, we all feel an obligation to try to do more.
Well, it must be quite something to feel the wind in your sails.
It really does.
Well, Tyler Jacks is the director of the Koch Institute for Integrative Cancer Research at MIT. Professor Jacks, a true pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
And by the way, listeners, you can find a link to WBUR's special series. We're calling it This Moment in Cancer. All the stories are up right now. There's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org, and we will continue our special coverage on This Moment in Cancer throughout the rest of the week. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.